If you want me alive, it means that I have to serve to your people. If you want me to be dead, okay, maybe that is my mission.
Ukraine's Catholic spiritual leader joins us to discuss the ravages of war, what his fellow citizens are saying about needed support from the West, and his worries about helping them maintain hope.
You don't know what it is. You don't know if there's a terrorist attack, if they're trying to shoot players, what's going on, if there's a dispute.
Kansas City Chiefs kicker Harrison Butker goes on the record about the shooting at the Super Bowl parade that killed one of his fans. And we go in depth about his views on Catholic fatherhood and family.
The crisis is a materialism that has locked people into this little tiny space.
A crisis of faith and what can be done about it. Bishop Robert Barron shares his solution with our Colm Flynn. And is modern parenting misguided? A new book provides advice for raising a Catholic family through a different lens. EWTN News In Depth starts now.
Many people are asking, where is God when Russians are killing us? Where is God when they are bombing us?
The head of Ukraine's Greek Catholic Church says his people are hurting. Thousands of Ukrainians dead, millions displaced, and a Lenten call to God, have you forsaken me? Welcome to EWTN News In Depth. As Ukraine runs low on ammunition and Russia makes progress on the battlefield, the foreign aid package for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan remains stalled in the House of Representatives, where the House Speaker has refused to put the bipartisan measure passed by the Senate up for a vote. Parliamentary maneuvers on Capitol Hill gained momentum this week to try to bypass the Speaker and break the stalemate. That, while hand-wringing over the urgent frontline situation in Ukraine remained top headlines. Pope Francis himself was caught in the middle of the controversy with this answer to a Swiss journalist who asked him if it was time for Ukraine to wave the white flag of surrender.
Ma credo che è più forte.
I think that the strongest one is the one who looks at the situation, thinks about the people, and has the courage of the white flag and negotiates. When you see that you are defeated, that things are not going well, you have to have the courage to negotiate. You are ashamed, but if you continue like this, how many deaths will there be? Do not be ashamed to negotiate before things get worse.
The Pope's interview drew swift criticism from both Ukrainian government and religious leaders. The Vatican quickly clarified his statements, saying the Pope did not mean to suggest that Ukraine should surrender, but rather seek a ceasefire and negotiate. In a sharp response, the Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church and other interreligious communities issued a statement saying surrender means death, and that Ukrainians would continue to defend freedom and a peace that is just. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's reaction to the Pope's interview was immediate and biting.
When the Russian evil started this war on February 24th, all Ukrainians stood up for defense. Christians, Muslims, Jews, everyone. I thank every Ukrainian chaplain who is with the army and the defense forces. They are on the front line, protecting life and humanity, supporting with prayer, conversation, and deeds. This is what the church is. It is together with people, not 2,500 kilometers away somewhere, virtually mediating between someone who wants to live and someone who wants to destroy you.
As these debates waged across the airwaves, Russian President Vladimir Putin lobbed a verbal assault. In an interview this week, he issued another blunt warning to the West, saying he's ready to use nuclear weapons if Russia's independence is threatened. Putin has repeatedly threatened nuclear warfare since launching an invasion of Ukraine. His comments came as Russians head to the polls this weekend for a presidential election he is sure to win, given the Kremlin's brutal crackdown on all political dissidents.
Poland knows, like a few other countries in the world, that security comes at a price. That is why we spend more than 4% of our GDP on maintaining and modernizing our armed forces. This is the highest percentage in the alliance.
The threat from Russian aggression was the focus of high-level discussions this week when both the Polish president and prime minister visited Washington to press the U.S. to break the impasse over funding for the war in Europe. Their visit marked the 25th anniversary of Poland's accession to NATO, a historic step into the West after breaking free from decades of communist rule. Poland borders Ukraine and would be the next in line if Russia advances. It has increased its own defense spending and is encouraging other NATO members to raise their spending on defense as well.
The only message we should send to Moscow is that the West is united more than ever before when it comes to Ukraine. And this is true, despite the problem in the House. And I still hope that Mr. Johnson will feel this responsibility for thousands of lives in Ukraine, because, in fact, he is responsible for the future of ordinary people.
The importance of Poland's show of solidarity on the need for aid to Ukraine was emphasized by the U.S. ambassador to Poland.
What happened today was remarkable. A Polish president and a Polish prime minister, who are on opposite sides of the political spectrum, traveled to Washington to stand in solidarity with the American president, Joe Biden, to ask Congress to get this supplemental passed. Why? Because for the people of Poland, this is 1939. This is Central Europe being attacked by a vicious foreign attacker. And in this case, it's Russia against Ukraine. Of course, they came to the White House, but they also went up to Capitol Hill to meet with the House Speaker and the Senate Majority Leader and Minority Leader to make the case that this is about democracy versus dictatorship, and democracy must win.
But there's no forward action by House Speaker Mike Johnson to schedule a vote on that bipartisan foreign aid package passed by the Senate. So, with a majority of House members believed to be in favor of the aid, two efforts have sprung up to force a parliamentary move called a discharge petition. It's a measure rarely used and rarely successful. But with a high enough percentage of House members' signatures, the House could bypass the Speaker and force a vote. There are two efforts because two different groups are pushing different aid proposals. Signature collection started this week. In the meantime, a very temporary reprieve for Ukraine as money was found for a short-time emergency aid package. The administration says $300 million in aid was obtained through unanticipated cost savings in previously approved Pentagon contracts. The emergency shipment will include artillery shells, anti-armor weapons, anti-aircraft Stinger weapons, and spare parts for equipment Ukraine already has. The Pentagon says the package will sustain Ukraine for a few more weeks, but that a much larger infusion of military aid is needed and that Ukraine is running out of time. And how is all this political maneuvering in the United States to fund democracy in Ukraine going over with Ukrainians themselves as the war passes this two-year mark? EWTN News In Depth got an unusual window into that worldview when we had a chance to visit with the leader of the Ukrainian Catholic Church. His Beatitudes, Vyacheslav Shevchuk, the primate of the Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church, sat down with reporter Catherine Hadrow during a visit to Washington.
Your Beatitude, thank you for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thank you for this possibility.
Absolutely. You are here in Washington, D.C. for a week long of meetings with lawmakers and church leaders. What do you see as the biggest obstacles stalling U.S. support for Ukraine right now?
Well, for simple Ukrainian people, seeing how their own pain, their own fight is becoming a simple object of the political joke between different part of the political society of USA is very painful. Because simple people do not understand why the possible help that we do need right now probably will come in the next months or later. Why? So please, when you are listening the word Ukraine, think about a concrete, simple, suffering people. Each day, probably 200 Ukrainians are killed. And any delay of the capability to receive the help to protect those people are paid with their blood.
So you're saying there's no time for delay. There's a great sense of urgency.
Absolutely. Another example. 14.6 million of Ukrainians are in urgent humanitarian need. And we have to provide this need right now. Because normally we need to have a grocery supplies, another kind of humanitarian help each day. We cannot say, okay, I'll eat on the next week. And our church specifically is a main actor in this humanitarian action of assistance to the Ukrainian people. And I can testify that aid cannot be delayed.
Many people see the politics of this two-year war. But your beatitude, what's the religious significance of this war in Ukraine?
The main, spiritual question which we are trying to answer is a question of the very fundamental existential situation. Many people are asking, where is God when Russians are killing us? Where is God when they are bombing us? When Jan widow was here children is crying on the tomb of her husband killed in the front line. In this situation, where is God? And that question is very important and deep religious questions. But God is with us. Jesus Christ today is crucified in crucified body of Ukraine. And we venerate him in the wounds of the simple people. Very often when I'm visiting hospitals I see those young soldiers, young civilians with amputations. We have 50-100 amputations right now in Ukraine. I had a feeling, Lord, those wounds are yours. I cannot worship you only in the church. My duty is venerate you here in the wounds of my people.
Can you tell us about your experience in Kyiv and what you're seeing and experiencing there on the ground?
Well, I remember this first day when war erupted, 24th of February, 22. With my eyes, I saw the city of Kyiv on fire, with Russian helicopters flying over my cathedral. It was something apocalyptical. I had a feeling that I have the same vision as Jeremiah when he was crying over the Jerusalem destroyed by invaders. And my question in tears to God was, why, Lord, why you made me to see all that?
Are you safe in Ukraine?
Well, nobody is safe in Ukraine. I, from the very beginning, completely entrusted myself, my life, into God's hand, saying, Lord, let your will be done. If you want me alive, it means that I have to serve to your people. If you want me to be dead, okay, maybe that is my mission, to lay there in these mass graves with my brethren. But I'm still alive, which means that I have a mission.
Your Beatitude, thank you again for your time today.
God bless you.
Our in-depth coverage on the war in Ukraine will continue into the weeks and months ahead. Still to come on EWTN News In Depth, we turn to faith and family, faith and young people, and faith in crisis.
Wow, you know, I'm a Catholic. This is St. Patrick's Cathedral. And there's all of these things being said when you watch the funeral that are making fun of the Catholic faith, that are making fun of our Lord. This is not acceptable.
You may know Harrison Butker as the football player who wins Super Bowls, but he's also a leading Catholic role model. His thoughts on that transgender funeral at America's most famous Catholic church.
The crisis is going to produce a new hunger. People can't live in the buffered self forever. They can't. Because the heart rebels against that.
And the founder of The Word on Fire talks to EWTN News In Depth about a crisis of faith in the Americas. Candid comments from these Catholic thought leaders ahead.
A star of this year's Kansas City Chiefs Super Bowl win, kicker Harrison Butker's clutch field goals helped propel the Chiefs into the winner's circle for the second year in a row. Butker is also a leading and respected voice in the Catholic laity, known as much for his strong Catholic faith as his football prowess. Within weeks of the Super Bowl win, he was already front and center as a keynote speaker at this Catholic men's conference in Wichita, Kansas. This is one of many appearances Butker will make this year at gatherings around the country, evangelizing Catholic men to encounter Christ and grow in relationship with one another. It was at that Wichita conference that EWTN News In Depth caught up with Butker, and he had a lot to say about faith and fatherhood, that fatal shooting at the Chiefs Super Bowl parade that took the life of one of his superfans, and his thoughts on that transgender funeral at St. Patrick's Cathedral. He spoke to reporter Mark Irons. Here's Harrison Butker on the record.
Looking back at the 2023-2024 football season, he calls it his best year yet. He attributes it not to all the countless hours practicing, but to putting his faith and his family first.
I prioritized that this season, and it's amazing that God allowed me to have the best season of my career.
Harrison Butker, the star kicker for the Kansas City Chiefs, is now a three-time Super Bowl champion. But he says his most important title is Catholic, husband, and father.
Who is Harrison Butker off the field?
I think I've really honed in on my vocation probably the last 3 years or so. I've really tried to be the head of my marriage, the head of the household, leading my children, leading my wife.
Butker wants to share that message with other men. We caught up with him less than a month after the Super Bowl, where he made time to speak at a Catholic men's conference in Wichita, Kansas.
What do you think are some specific challenges men face today that could be keeping them from their potential?
I think part of the fall from the first sin of Adam and Eve is men want to be like women and women want to be like men. You see a lot of times where women want to be leading the marriage and they want to be the head of the household. And the man, you know, it's the Homer Simpson, sit on the couch, drink beer, and just watch TV and just let everything go on around me. And I'm not really at the center of what's even going on in my household. So, you know, I'm very passionate about encouraging men to be courageous, to not be afraid to be the leader. It's something that we struggle with, I think, a lot of times, to go outside of our comfort zone and to say, you know what? God has called me to be a leader and to lead by example. I'm going to lead my household and I'm going to lead outside the world when I'm evangelizing. So that's something that I'm very passionate about.
He's also speaking out against violence. Weeks before the men's conference, on Ash Wednesday, as Butker expressed his Catholic faith, marked with ashes at the Kansas City Chiefs Super Bowl victory parade, a day meant for triumph quickly turned tragic.
We go on the stage, we get acknowledged. I'm leaving the stage, and you hear just a bunch of gunshots going on. Brrr. You don't know what it is. You don't know if there's a terrorist attack, if they're trying to shoot players, what's going on, if there's a dispute. When I found out that Mrs. Lisa Lopez Galvin, that she had a number 7 jersey on, it just took me aback.
More than 20 people were shot in the gunfire, and a fan wearing his jersey was killed.
By this, you know, barbaric violence, it is so sad that there's no reason that should have happened at all. Unfortunately, it did happen at the parade.
Lisa Lopez Galvin shot and killed. She was wearing your jersey, also a fellow Catholic. I mean, this was very personal for you.
Very personal. My faith is the most important thing in my life. She was obviously a Chiefs fan, but it seems like she was a fan of me, not just because I was a, you know, a kicker and maybe she appreciates, you know, games that come down to field goals, but she appreciated the fact that I was a Catholic, that I was outspoken for my faith, and that is just encouragement for me to never waver in my beliefs, to be unapologetically Catholic. And it's so sad to think about the way that she, you know, had to leave us. You know, should have been a joyful celebration, celebrating the Chiefs, celebrating all the great players on our team, you know, looking to start the 40 days of Lent. And unfortunately, she was in the middle of some, you know, violence that could have been handled many other places than a parade.
You gave her family your jersey. Was she laid to rest in that jersey?
She was. She was. That was what the family wanted. Again, very humbling to me.
How do you process that when you think about that? That's,
you know, I never set out to be an NFL kicker. I never set out to have this platform. I never thought I'd be having the success in the NFL that I am. I never, you know, wanted to be this public person that people look to see what their ideas are, what their stances are on different subjects. But because of that, it has given me, you know, a great following of people like, you know, this amazing woman. It's the faith. It was the most important thing in her life. It's the most important thing in my life. And to be able to receive that encouragement, that love, even though I never met her, I heard that from her family, how much she was encouraged by me and loved all my work. That's just very encouraging for me to continue on the path that I'm on and to be never unwavering in my beliefs.
I do want to ask, there is a debate in this country over the best way to curb gun violence after being so close to it.
Yeah.
Any thoughts?
Yeah. You know, I had to do a lot of thinking about what took place at the parade. I know gun violence was a big discussion, but at the end of the day, this is degenerate violence and it should not be occurring. I think we need strong fathers in the home. I think we need men that are leading, that are setting good examples, that are teaching the young men in our society that violence is not the way to handle our disputes. It's very unfortunate what happened. Unfortunately, many, many children were injured. A beautiful young lady was killed over someone getting offended and turning to violence to handle that dispute. It's so sad. I don't think guns are the issue. I think we need fathers in the home that are being great examples for our youth.
Soon after the parade shooting, another national headline caught the attention of many Catholics, including Butker. In New York City, a controversial and scandalous funeral service for a transgender activist took place in St. Patrick's Cathedral.
This great whore, St. Cecilia, mother of all whores.
In his first public comments 5 days after the funeral, Cardinal Timothy Dolan of the Archdiocese of New York responded in a podcast.
Once the funeral started is when the trouble started because of the irreverence and the disrespect of the big crowd that was there.
The Cardinal also mentioned that Harrison Butker had sent him a note about the funeral.
If I'm not mistaken, he sent me a note of solidarity and just to let me know how upset he was over the incident.
But Butker says his letter to the Cardinal shared more than that.
So I actually went on His Eminence's show last year.
That's
and
right.
They had asked for me to go on the show this year. And I sent a letter saying, I would love to go on the show, but I can't unless something is addressed with what happened at St. Patrick's Cathedral. Someone should be held accountable. There needs to be a strong stance. We need men that are leading, saying, you know what, this is not right, this is wrong. As Catholics, we will not accept this. We need to take a hard stance. I think sometimes we value what the world says about us instead of what Jesus Christ says about us. And so that letter was more encouraging His Eminence, saying, please put out a strong statement, say that this was awful that happened. It should have never happened. It should have been stopped before it even began. And no statement came about from it, and I was very disappointed to hear that. And so I do want to clear the air and just say that, yes, it was bad what happened at St. Patrick's, but the letter was really encouraging and pushing His Eminence to make a statement decrying what happened and say that this was an abomination, someone should be held accountable, potentially fired, and nothing came about from that. And I think we have to have, especially leaders in the Catholic Church, standing up to all of the woke things that are going on in our society.
This NFL star wants to use his platform to glorify God. In a speech he gave last year at his alma mater to the 2023 graduating class of Georgia Tech, he shared this simple advice with the graduates.
Get married and start a family. Wow. I will say this is the most important ring I have right here.
From the graduation stage to the White House, he's been an advocate for marriage, family, and human life.
You made a subtle pro-life fashion statement at the White House last year when the Chiefs visited after the Super Bowl.
Unfortunately, there are some laws being pushed through that I don't think value all human life. One of those laws is allowing abortion to be legal in this country. So to have a tie that in Latin I thought brought attention to the unborn, I picked vulnerati presidio, which is to protect the most vulnerable. And the unborn are, to me, the greatest victims in our society. They don't have a voice. They don't necessarily look like humans. They're not very big. They can't fight for themselves. There's not a lot of people that are fighting for them. And I just think it's a great atrocity that's occurring in this country with massacring the unborn.
Harrison Butker's convictions are inspired by his love for Jesus Christ.
We are in the midst of a Eucharistic revival in the Catholic Church. This summer, there's going to be a Eucharistic Congress. What does the Eucharist mean to you?
Wow, that's a great question. So coming back into the faith, I went to a conference, and I remember going to adoration. There were thousands of college students my age that were all adoring our Lord. And it was pretty amazing for me to know that there was people all over the country that believed the exact same thing as I did, that even some Catholics would think is crazy. You know, some Catholics struggle with the idea that bread and wine is the body, blood, soul, and divinity of our Lord. But to be encouraged by all those around me that, no, this is Jesus Christ. This is actually him, and we have the opportunity to be one with him during communion. It's very powerful, and I think that can't be promoted enough. I think a lot of Catholics who prioritize adoration and time with our Lord in daily Mass and daily communion and confession so that they can receive our Lord even more often, I think they see this big growth in their spiritual life because they are allowing themselves to fully immerse themselves in the Church and her sacraments. So I'm very excited for the Eucharistic Congress. For everything that's going on in Indianapolis, I think our Lord needs to be king. He needs to be front and center. And as Catholics, we have to be unapologetically proud of our faith and of Jesus Christ.
If you aren't familiar with the true presence of Jesus Christ in the Eucharist, chances are you are familiar with Taylor Swift, who's dating Butker's teammate Travis Kelce.
As you know, the Chiefs got even more attention this year when Taylor Swift started attending games. What has it been like having her around the team, and are you a Swiftie?
I wouldn't say I'm a Swiftie, but I got to meet her after our New Year's game. We had just clinched the AFC West, and I rarely go out ever. It was New Year's, so you know, got to get the champagne and enjoy the ball dropping and all of that stuff. So I went to a party, and this was very tame. I'm not, you know, I wore a suit and tie, you know, to the party. But Travis showed up and Taylor was there, and I got to meet her, and she was just so humble and so gracious. I don't think she grew up a football fan, so everything for her is so cool, and especially as a kicker, she thinks that's amazing that I can kick the ball so far through the uprights. So I was a little nervous to meet Taylor Swift. I mean, it's Taylor Swift, so maybe I'm a Swiftie if I was nervous to meet her. But it was a great experience, and I can't say enough great things about her, and I hope they, you know, as I said at Georgia Tech, I hope they get married and start a family.
That's right. Harrison Butker, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Harrison Butker shared much more with our Mark Irons. You can watch the full interview on the EWTN YouTube page. Headlines are next in the Week in Review, the TikTok vote, food to Gaza, an unusual Oscars acceptance speech, and this.
It's going to be a culture that will be family-friendly or unfriendly more than the economy.
Later, parenting advice from the author of a new book offering a Catholic alternative to the high-pressure parenting of modern-day culture.
The House's passage of a bill about the popular social media app TikTok tops the Week in Review. The bill could lead to a national ban of one of the nation's most popular apps, which has more than 150 million American users. In a rare show of bipartisan support, lawmakers on both sides of the aisle quickly advanced the bill when it came to the House floor on Wednesday. The legislation would not immediately ban TikTok, but give its Chinese parent company, ByteDance, 5 months to sell the app, or else it will be removed from app stores. Proponents of the bill argue the app poses a national security threat because the Chinese government could coerce ByteDance to hand over the data of U.S. app users and influence voters ahead of election season.
We know that people enjoy the platform. We know small businesses use the platform. But having, you know, the Chinese Communist Party have access to data, have the ability to push messages and push propaganda does put our security at risk.
So this is not a bill to ban TikTok. They just need to sell TikTok to an American owner. And I think TikTok will get a lot better as a result.
But TikTok's users, many of them in their teens and 20s, are speaking out against the bill, saying it goes against their First Amendment rights and threatens the hundreds of thousands of people who rely on TikTok to make a living.
If you vote for this ban, you are voting against my First Amendment and my way of freedom of speech. You are voting against my small business. You are voting against me getting a slice of my American pie.
The bill now heads to the Senate, where many lawmakers do not show the same eagerness as their House counterparts to pass the proposed legislation. Earlier in this program, we spoke with Kansas City Chiefs player Harrison Butker about the shooting at the Super Bowl parade celebration that took the life of one of his fans, Lisa Lopez Galvan, and left 22 others injured. The latest update from the investigation, some of the weapons recovered at the scene were unlawfully purchased. Kansas City prosecutors are charging three men with firearms trafficking in relation to the incident. All three men were involved in straw purchases of some of the firearms found at the scene of the shooting, meaning they bought a firearm for someone who was legally unable to. There is no evidence that these three newly charged men were among those who opened fire at the parade. An elite team of U.S. Marines specializing in anti-terrorism security has been sent to the U.S. Embassy in Haiti. This is the second time this week that military forces are being called to assist as gang violence there spirals out of control. The attacks from powerful criminal gangs have left Port-au-Prince in chaos. Businesses and schools closed their doors. Thousands of people have been forced from their homes, and escaping the country safely is near impossible after the border and airport shut down. A stealth helicopter mission organized by two congressmen rescued 10 Americans this week, including author and orphanage founder Mitch Albom. But hundreds of Americans remain in the country with no way to escape. Israel announced plans on Wednesday to move more than a million displaced Palestinians from Gaza's southern city of Rafah in preparation for a military assault there. Israeli Defense Forces say the displaced will be moved to what they call humanitarian enclaves. More than half of Gaza's population currently shelters in Rafah, where many of them are living with severe shortages of basic needs like food, water, and shelter. The IDF says the humanitarian enclaves will be created with the international community and will provide housing, food, and field hospitals. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says the planned offensive into Rafah is necessary to destroy Hamas's remaining military battalions. This week also marks the beginning of Ramadan, a month-long observance in Islam that focuses on fasting and prayer. Muslims in the region are struggling to find places of worship as hundreds of mosques have been damaged or destroyed. And with food so scarce, many are breaking their fasts with scraps. The first humanitarian aid ship reached Gaza today, bringing with it more than 200 tons of food and supplies. The ship set sail from Cyprus on Tuesday. As the humanitarian crisis worsens in Gaza, hundreds of thousands of people are left on the brink of starvation. But with Israeli forces restricting direct routes into the territory, international aid groups are left strategizing new ways to administer much-needed aid. Once this ship distributes its supplies, a second ship with even more aid will depart Cyprus for Gaza. renewed attention this week to the plight of Ukrainian civilians caught in the crossfire of war. Last weekend, a first-person account of the early days of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, a film called 20 Days in Mariupol, won the Oscar Award for Best Documentary. Here's a short clip.
Mariupol blocked from all sides.
Russians have entered the city. The war has begun, and we have to tell its story. This is painful to watch. But it must be painful to watch.
In accepting the award, the movie's director said he might be the first Oscar-winning director to ever say he wished his own film had never been made. The movie depicts how he himself was trapped in the city of Mariupol while struggling to document the war. He said he would trade that Oscar, the first ever for a Ukrainian film, if history could be changed so that Russia had never invaded his country. A film of interest to many Catholics opened across the country last Friday. Cabrini, the story of St. Francis Xavier Cabrini, depicts the Italian nun's mission to New York City in the late 1800s, when she opened an orphanage and hospital for Italian immigrants facing hardship, poverty, and segregation. The film grossed more than $7 million on opening weekend. We're joined now by the film's producer, Leo Severino, a 20-year Hollywood veteran. His credits also include last year's indie success story, Sound of Freedom. It's so great to have you here, Leo. Is this what you expected, this reception of high-grossing, well-received film about a nun?
Well, it's what we were hoping. So I don't know if it's what we were expecting. I'm just glad that the film turned out the way that it did. You know, kudos to our director, Alejandro Monteverde.
Yes.
He's just, to me, he's the greatest director on the planet. And he has a heart for the artistic excellence, but also for films that are going to be uplifting and inspiring. And that are shining a light in kind of the darkness that is Hollywood. Mm. And that's been our hope, is to try to make films that are artistically at the highest level. You know, our first film, Bella, we hope that we've grown a long way since then. By the time we get to Cabrini and hopefully future films, the idea is to relay that truth, but in the highest artistic setting that we possibly can muster.
Well, I think you certainly did that.
Thank you.
Some people were worried that it wasn't religious enough. You never saw Mother Cabrini, thank God. You never saw her in her state of deep contemplative prayer, which was that place of strength from which she garnered her mission. Was that an intentional decision? Was that something that you guys talked about and thought about?
No, in fact, quite the opposite. I would say if people didn't walk away with her seeing her praying, then they missed it. The focus of the film isn't just her interior life.
Mm.
It's so much the corporal works of mercy, the spiritual works of mercy that she engaged in, and to get this unknown saint known to as broad an audience as possible. So everything that's in the film has to be put in there to drive the story.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it might come across as preachy to a broader audience. So I implore the audience's patience with us. We're trying to do the best that we can. You know, I would hope that that people would support us trying to get this saint known. I'm trying to shine a light on her life. And I think we did a pretty accurate job of doing so, you know, and prayer is certainly part of it. She quotes the scriptures. She mentions that, you know, we can do all things in He who strengthens us. That's her drive, and that's expressly in the film. So it's kind of a head scratcher for people that didn't catch that. I would say maybe take a look again, see.
Yeah.
Hopefully you'll notice it the second time.
Well, I think that's an important invitation. I have a personal connection to her. Her feast day is on my birthday.
Is that right?
Yes. And as an immigrant in this country, I certainly felt called into her deep spirituality of sanctity through small things.
Mm.
And that personal call, I think, is one that is very much manifested in the film. I'd ask just one last question, which is the timing. Immigration is something everyone is talking about right now. This film, obviously, you didn't line it up that way. You couldn't have known that would be what people were talking about. But is the defense of the church also, and the corporal works of mercy that we all know and love, part of the message of the film? Get to know this woman, but also get to know how we can help the migrant.
Yeah, no, just like with Sound of Freedom, we didn't make the film with any political, you know, drive, any political spin on it. There was this problem, and it's a terrible problem, and the problem ran really, really deep. We thought, what can we do as filmmakers? Well, we can make it known. And same with Mother Cabrini. She's an incredible saint. More than anything, it was that interior side of her, that drive, that perseverance, that faith, that deep faith that she had, that if God is calling you to do something, you do it. That was a motivating factor. It wasn't anything political. But when it comes to the immigration thing, she wasn't so much interested in her writings in immigration. She came over as a legal immigrant, obviously, and was dealing with people that had gone through Ellis Island. She was interested in the immigrant, in the person, in the dignity of whoever it is. She's the sort of person that I remember thinking as I was driving home one day, in the rare times that it rains in Los Angeles, it was raining, and there was a family that was out, and you know, some people were there helping them and giving them some money and whatnot. But I thought, I don't think Mother Cabrini would have just, even if she would have helped there, she wouldn't, I don't think she could rest that night until she knew that these people had some sort of shelter.
Yeah.
That's the sort of drive that Mother Cabrini had. So it's more that individual person than it is any particular policy.
Real encounter. Well, thank you so much, Leo, both for your courage and for this mission and for sharing so much with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for all the support.
You can now see the film Cabrini in a theater near you. On Wednesday, Pope Francis marked 11 years at the helm of the Catholic Church. International leaders sent messages of congratulations to the Holy Father. Leaders from the United States, China, and Azerbaijan gave their best wishes to the pontiff. Francis also received a message from Russia's Vladimir Putin, who called him a defender of peace with an honest vision of world problems. The Holy Father's 11th year as Pope has been influenced by world events and conflicts, from the war in Ukraine to the war in Gaza. During his audience on the anniversary, he made another plea for an end to war.
Oggi.
Today they brought me a rosary and a gospel of a young soldier who died on the front line. He used to pray with them. Many young men die. Let us pray to the Lord that he may give us grace to win this madness that is war, which is always a defeat.
In the last year, Pope Francis has made more than 150 appeals for peace in Ukraine and more than 60 for a ceasefire in the Middle East. We'll be right back.
We have the answers. You've now experienced the hunger. We got the bread of life that will satisfy it.
Next, we go in depth with Bishop Robert Barron. Stay right there.
He's one of the most popular bishops in the United States, thanks in part to his acclaimed Word on Fire ministries. Bishop Robert Barron launched the International Apostolate, which reaches millions of people in hopes of bringing Catholics back to the faith and giving them a better understanding of the sacraments. Correspondent Colin Flynn sat down with Bishop Barron this week to talk about the crisis of faith inside and outside of the church and what he thinks is needed to fix it.
Bishop Barron, it's great to see you again. Thank you for doing this interview.
You're quite welcome. Good to be with you.
Now, I've heard you speak before about this crisis of spirituality that's gripping the world. Just to define it a bit, first of all, what do you mean when you say a spiritual crisis?
Well, I mean, you know, the immanentism, the materialism, the secularism that has taken hold of much of our culture, at least in the West. I want to be careful about that, which I think has haunted the minds of our young people. If you're told that there's no transcendent point of reference, nothing beyond this world, all there is, you know, matter in motion, things dumbly here, we've come from nowhere, we're going nowhere, that produces, of course, a deep, you know, thunderstorm in the heart and in the soul. And, you know, it also gives rise to a spiritual longing, which you can see in people. But the crisis is a materialism that has locked people into this little tiny space. And it's producing, I would say, these spiking numbers in depression, anxiety, suicidal tendencies in young people. That's the spiritual crisis. Mm.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. What is the knock-on effect? Because, you know, a lot of young people will say, well, it's just about the here and now and live and be the best person you can. And it's all about this life. You don't have to think about any other life. Do your best.
Yeah, the problem is that the human heart speaks against that. So we know from St. Augustine and from the Bible, the heart longs for God. Nothing in this world can satisfy the hungry heart. you can deceive yourself for a while, and that happens to a lot of younger people, that, you know, enough money and pleasure and power in this world, I'll be happy. But the heart knows otherwise and will rebel against that sort of immanentism. So that can last for a while. But trust me, and I say this as a pastor for many years who's dealt with people at all stages of life, the heart will rebel against that kind of reductionism.
What has it been replaced with? Spirituality is declining in the West. What's taking its place?
The goods of the world. And it's the old idols. You know, the Bible knew about it. Of sex and pleasure, power, fame, self-esteem. You know, we'll fill in that empty space with anything the world can give us. The problem is, as John of the Cross told us, we have these infinite caverns inside of us. And so no matter how much you throw into those caverns, it's not going to fill it up. They can be filled only by God, by the infinite. And the church needs to be in the front row speaking these truths. We should not be cowed by the culture into privacy or to take a seat, you know, toward the back of the room. No, no. The spiritual voice, as always, needs to be the prime voice in the culture.
I interviewed Dr. Jordan Peterson recently in Canada, and yeah. He made the point, which I thought was very good, that it's not as if young people are not looking for a cause. He said, look at yeah. things like the environmental issues, that they're so mobilized and dedicated sure. to fighting for that cause. How does the church convince them that their spiritual life is a cause worth fighting for?
You know, I like that point, too. I think Peterson's right about that. Go back to Ignatius of Loyola. If you've been through the spiritual exercises, you come to that meditation of the two standards. There are two armies assembled. One belongs to the devil, one belongs to Christ. The two standards are raised. Okay, which army are you in? What's going to be your fight? Bob Dylan, one of my poetic heroes, says, you know, you got to serve somebody. It might be the devil, it might be the Lord, but you got to serve somebody. So I'm with Peterson. Sure, let's give someone something to fight for. Fight in Christ's army. Join his army.
What about those who believe or maybe think in the church that for the young people who are left in the church, that if the church pitches too hard and speaks too much about things like the Eucharist, it could turn young people off because they might just would never be able to comprehend it or they wouldn't believe it?
Nonsense. It's on the contrary. And all that, I grew up with that nonsense, and that it's caused nothing but havoc in the church. First of all, they can't understand it. That's for the birds. There are young people studying science at the highest level, studying engineering at the highest level, studying law and mathematics at the highest level. Why in the world would we think, oh, they can't understand these themes of theology? Secondly, we should challenge them more than we do. I grew up with the, you know, church of relevance, and let's make it as easy and user-friendly as possible, and let's give you no challenges. That's why they left. That's why they left, because who cares about such a church? We should intellectually and morally challenge young people, give them something to fight for, give them something substantive to think about, and they know what they stand for, and they're going to go, you know, fight for it.
Now, the Eucharistic revival, this is something that you have set up to try and combat this spiritual crisis. Can you tell me about it and how it's going at the moment?
Yeah, because I didn't set it up. I'll take a little credit, because when I was the chair of our committee...
Take the full credit.
I won't take full credit, because when I was chair of evangelization and catechesis, I did say to my brother bishops, I think we got a problem here, everybody, because the Pew Forum study had come out about that 70% not believing in the real presence. I just said, I think we should do something. So a lot of the chairs of the committees got together and said, yeah, good, let's work on this.
Do you think that's true, by the way, and sorry to cut across you, that almost 70% of Catholics don't believe in the real presence in the Eucharist?
Well, there were some questions about, like, how the thing was framed, and was it just a matter of, you know, was the question framed clearly enough for people? Let me put it this way. There are way, 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 way too many Catholics who don't have an adequate sense of the Eucharist. Let's just leave it at that and maybe leave the numbers aside. And I think we have to address the problem. And that's why we launched this, you know, revival, which is coming to a sort of a climax this summer in Indianapolis, a big gathering of the whole country. Four processions coming from the four parts of the country.
And what do you hope will come from it, from this Eucharistic revival?
A keener sense of the importance of Jesus Christ, you know. So the Eucharist, the real presence of the Lord, it's the great enduring sign of his presence among us. So I hope it awakens people's faith. Let it be a magnet for young people, especially. That's what I want.
Bishop Barron, it was great talking to you, and thank you again for your time.
Always a joy to be with you. Thanks.
The Holy Eucharist as a magnet for young people. a magnet for all people, we hope. You can still sign up for the National Eucharistic Congress. It's expected the multi-day Catholic event in Indianapolis this July will draw tens of thousands. Go to ewtn.com/Eucharist and click on Register Now to receive a discount. I will be one of the event's MCs, and I look forward to seeing you there. You can learn more about the Congress by listening to Revive, the National Eucharistic Revival podcast with Tim Glimkowski. I joined Tim on his podcast in an episode that will air March 18th, and we discussed how the Congress got started and what it might mean for the future of the church. You can find the podcast on Apple and Spotify. Looking to add more prayer to your life this year? This week begins a 9-month-long novena spearheaded by Cardinal Raymond Burke. The prayer asks Our Lady of Guadalupe to intercede for us and our world, and ends on her feast day, December 12th. Cardinal Burke says that the great reception to the novena shows that people across the globe hunger for peace.
There's been a very enthusiastic reception. We're now at 135,000 persons registered who are participating in the 9-month novena. Clearly, people are hungering for the good order, which brings peace, for the transformation of societies and cultures, which today have either grown forgetful of God or are hostile to God.
It's never too late to join. To find the novena to Our Lady of Guadalupe and pray along, go to novena.cardinalburke.com. When we come back, helping families grow and flourish, we talk to the author of a new book, Guiding Modern Parents Toward Success. Parenting is not what it used to be, thanks in part to new technology, new expenses, and new expectations. But with America's birth rate at a historic low, how can our society encourage parents to have more kids? A new book called Family Unfriendly attempts to answer that question. I recently spoke with the author, Tim Carney, about his book and how culture plays an important role in helping families grow and flourish. Tim, thank you so much for joining us. In your new book, you look at the trials of modern parenting. Is parenting really harder than it used to be?
In a lot of ways, it is. And in a lot of ways, that's imposed by parents on themselves and by our culture. The economics is a factor here, but it's not really much more expensive to raise children now than it was 30 years ago. But we have so many fewer kids now. I mean, you've seen the numbers. Millennials, Gen Z, they're not getting married as much. They're not having babies. And it's not for a lack of desire. They still want 2.7 babies is the ideal, but they're having 1.6, 1.7. So a lot of it is just the expectations. Parents are putting in so much more time. They're driving their kids to travel sports. They're getting convinced that the whole point of, you know, teaching your kid an instrument is that they become a virtuoso. And so the culture really is imposing costs on parents that don't really make happier kids, that don't make happier parents, and that I think is driving down the birth rate.
Well, you talked about birth rates. They're on a downward trend in many developed nations, including here in the United States. What do you think would actually incentivize people to start having families, not necessarily money, but culturally? What would help millennials get over this fear of perfection?
So it's exactly that. It's one, a lot of it just is going to come down to anthropology, to philosophy, to faith. What do you think is the purpose of raising kids? Is it to have a super high achieving child? Are you a failure if your kid doesn't get into college or doesn't, you know, end up playing D1 sports? No, I really think what has to change is the broader culture has to say, we will support you raising kids because that's good. I saw this in Israel, and it's no coincidence that Israel is a country with its faith right in the middle, but it trickled out. Even secular Jews in Israel have a much higher birth rate than Americans or Europeans do, and that's because the faith trickles out into the culture, and the culture says, we will support you raising kids. It's not an individual undertaking. It is a societal undertaking to help you raise kids, and I think that has to be informed by faith, and it's no coincidence that religious religious Americans have a lot more children. Those who go to church every week, they have a lot more children than the average American.
Well, let's dig into that faith question, because as hard as it is to raise children in today's culture, it's a unique challenge to raise Catholic children. Research shows fewer and fewer cradle Catholics carry their faith into adulthood. Why do you think so many Catholic parents struggle to pass the faith on to their children?
Well, they're up against the culture. We tell our children, my wife and I, we have six kids, and we tell them when they're, you know, by the time they're in elementary school, we say, there's a lot of things the culture thinks is bad that we know are good. There's a lot of things the culture thinks is good that we know are bad. We are supported by communities and institutions, great Catholic schools, great Catholic parishes. And I think a lot of Americans think, okay, well, raising kids is just, that's what mom and dad do. It's an individual undertaking. But what we need is really strong parishes and really strong schools that support us in this undertaking, whether it's teaching Catholic teaching or just keeping smartphones and social media out of their hands. Parents can't do that alone. So I actually say the real burden is going to land on churches. Does your parish make sure that it's just something as simple as a parish picnic? There should be, you know, if it's $5 a head, it should be $20 a family. It doesn't get any bigger. Up to tuition, up to saying we're not going to ban schools, and just going out of their way to welcome new parents into it so that everybody sees, oh, wait a second. They want us to have kids. They want us to bring screaming babies to mass. I think religious a lot of parishes aren't stepping up. We've been blessed with parishes and schools that do. That's what Catholic parents need right now.
Well, Tim, one thing is parish structures, and another thing is the model that parents provide through their own faith. Research from the Center for Applied Research in the Apostolate found that one key to raising lifelong Catholics is ensuring faith and prayer play a vital role in the home. How can the church equip parents to evangelize in this way?
I mean, this is one of the cases where, A, we have to remember you can't outsource it to Catholic schools. Parents are the primary educator of children. And B, one of the key things is lectures, homilies, they don't work as much as actual action. And so I think if parents there actually need to lead by example. I'm saying this and thinking of all my failures on this front, but lead by example. Make sure your children know that you are men and women of prayer. And when you have difficulties, that you take them to God. That's going to have the most evangelizing effect of anything.
Well, Tim, we're looking forward to reading your book. I know I am, and I know parents will find it a great resource. Thank you for your faith, and thank you for your commitment to this.
Thank you so much.
Tim Carney's new book, Family Unfriendly, will be available at major book retailers this Tuesday. And that does it for this edition of EWTN News In Depth. I'm Montse Alvarado. We hope to see you again same time next week for more reports and news important to your Catholic life. See you then.